Clicked. It's been clicked.
It's been clicked. Are you ready for some nanner? Nair, nair.
Spoiler alert, I'm not looking forward to nair, this
nair,
movie.
Nair, nair, nair. It is time for Jaws, Jaws. J-O-Z-Z, Jaws, Jaws. Jaws, Jaws. J-O-Z-Z, Jaws.
It is going to be an... I guess it is kind of an important cultural experience to watch this movie. Mm-hmm.
It is.
I've just never been able to sit through it.
It is an important cultural movie. This movie changed everything. Everything. Without this movie, there probably would have been eventually, but like without this is the first summer blockbuster movie ever. Like ever. It's the first movie that was just released into wide release without being slowly rolled out. It was the first movie that just broke all, but it was the biggest, highest grossing movie of all time the year it came out. No one expected it. And it was predicted to be a huge flop. An embarrassment for not only for the studio, but for Steven Spielberg, for Peter Benchley, for all of the actors involved. Everyone thought this was a nightmare and it is going to fail. Richard Dreyfuss, one of the leads, went on a talk show before the movie was released and told the world that this movie was going to be terrible. And he apologized in advance for how bad he was going to be in it. So, you know... That's not cool, but he did it.
I'd be so mad at him if I worked on this movie.
But I think Spielberg was like, yeah, everyone thought that. Like, I don't blame him. We all thought this was a nightmare. Spielberg wasn't sleeping because of this movie. It was the most stress he'd ever been under. Think of it. He had made Sugarland Express, which was a failure. That was his only theatrical film. And he made Duel, which was a big hit, but was a TV movie. He gave up a dream project to make Jaws. His agent was like, forget the costume drama you want to make. This shark movie is where it's at. You got to take the shark movie. And Spielberg was like, I already made this movie. It was called Duel. I already made like a man against the elements kind of movie. It was called Duel. But he read the script and was like, I think there's something here. I'm 27. I can do anything.
So the agent was the only one who had any hope.
Well, okay. So Peter Benchley, who was an unknown writer at the time, although he was like the grandson of Robert Benchley, so he had pedigree. He had written this book. It took him like a year and a half to write. It's a garbage novel. I don't know if you've ever read Jaws.
No, I didn't even know it was a book.
It was a novel called Jaws. It was supposed to be called like Jaws of the Leviathan, but... The publisher was like, that's a stupid title. And so they just called it Jaws, which, serendipitously enough, is an awesome title. And it's a trash novel. He actually wrote the novel, and his publisher was like, this is too literary. Make it trashier. And so, like, he had to, like, make it trashier. Yeah, because it's a garbage, like, airport read. It's just, it's a beach read. Like, you're supposed to read it and be like, and trash. Like, and then, like, go on and read something else. But before it got published, the studio bought it. We're like, this is going to make a great movie. They were going to give it. I can't remember what they were going to give it to a different director, an established director who like I can't. Oh, John Sturges. John Sturges is established director. And he had no idea what to do with it. And Peter Benchley. Oh, that's what it was. So John Sturges was going to do it. And then Dick Richards was going to do it. But then Peter Benchley came around and they had...
Wait, his name is Dick Richards?
His name is... I was waiting. Dick Dixon. Dick Rich... The richest Dick. Dick Richards was going to direct it. And then Peter Benchley, they had a meeting and he kept saying... And Dick Richards kept saying, all right, so in the next scene, when the whale attacks, and Peter Benchley was like, it's a shark. And Richards would be like, yeah. So my idea for the whale. And they're like, and finally Peter Benchley was like, can I talk to everyone else for a second? The guy doesn't know the difference between a whale and a shark. We cannot have Dick Richards direct this. And so Spielberg went in for a meeting. He saw like the first draft of the script sitting there. He flipped through it and he was like, I think I may want to direct this shark movie. And they were like, great. We'll set you up with a big tank. We'll set you up in the studio. You got a big tank. Like we film like all the ocean movies. And Spielberg's like, no. We're going to film this on the ocean, on the Atlantic Ocean. And they're all, Steve, there's a reason nobody has ever filmed a movie on the ocean. Because you cannot control anything. on the ocean. You can't film in a boat. It's going to rock all over the place. We don't have the equipment. Nothing exists to film. He's like, we'll film on the ocean. It'll take us 2 months. It took them 6 months to film the movie, and they weren't done. He was like, I could film it for $9 million. It went so over budget. I believe the final filming budget, the budget was $9 million. It cost them like 20-some million dollars to film. It went so over budget. When they were done, they still weren't done. Like, it just, it kept, he was like, oh, we got to add this. We got to add this. The mechanical shark, famously, never worked. It never worked. It didn't work so much that he was eventually like, I have to come up with a new style of filmmaking because the shark doesn't work. And that actually, as they said, the shark not working saved the movie, because he was like, what would Alfred Hitchcock do? He would film around it. He would figure out a new way to film that doesn't need to show the shark. Save the movie. The shark not working. They shot, well, we'll talk about it later, but they shot a scene that almost killed one of the cast members.
I've heard about this.
And because it didn't work, they had to rewrite the script, and it fixed the script. So many happy, this entire movie is a series of fortunate accidents that ended up creating a seminal motion picture. When they showed it to audiences, people threw up and left the theater. And they were like, we did it. We did it. So that's Jaws in a nutshell. How's that make you feel?
So the cultural implications of this movie are kind of what upset me a bit.
Which is?
Just the demonization of sharks.
Demonization of sharks. Peter Benchley always regretted writing this book because of that.
It has had a lot of really negative impacts on conservation. How is that word?
Conservation, yep.
Conservation efforts for sharks and things like that. And people tend to focus more on sharks than the like actual dangers of swimming out in the ocean. It's just not good.
It had a negative impact on perception of sharks. It had a positive impact, however, on interest in marine biology. One of the things that they say is that people would always come up to Spielberg or Benchley or even Richard Dreyfuss and be like, it's because of you that I became a marine biologist. Like, that movie made me realize there's more going on in the ocean than your average person
knows. I can't imagine wanting to be a marine biologist.
Can you imagine wanting to make a movie on the ocean that when you're afraid of the water?
I can't imagine wanting to be near the ocean.
Yeah, I know. I hate it too. J-O-Z-Z, this is Jaws, this is Jaws. Are you ready to watch Jaws?
Yeah.
Yes. I am so... I haven't watched this movie in a while. I've seen this movie so many times. I saw it when I was a kid. I've seen this movie so many times. And
I've seen parts of this movie.
I am so excited to watch it straight through with you. So should we just get going? We can talk about Jaws later?
That is how we record this show.
That would be awesome. Hey, everybody. I'm Phil.
And I'm Willow.
And
it's Del Toro time.
Do you know what I would have loved? I would have loved if at one point Peter Benchley, who wrote the novel of Jaws, had said, or even Spielberg had said, you're all assuming that the title is referring to the shark's jaws, but it's not necessary. I wish that someone would do a read on this story where they were like, what if it wasn't referring to the shark's jaws? What if it was referring to someone else's jaws? Let's focus on that. Like Brody. What about the Brody's jaws?
Who's Brody?
The police chief.
Okay.
Like, what about
I didn't get any of their names.
What about... So Brody is the police chief. Hooper is the marine biologist who comes in. And Quint is the old, like, sailor, the fisherman.
I think Hooper and Brody should switch names.
Why? Why?
Because Hooper sounds more like a sheriff name than Brody. And Brody sounds like a guy who used to be a surfer who wants now to be a marine biologist.
But they're last names.
Yeah, but we don't ever refer to them by their first name.
Brody.
Also,
and
Sheriff
Hooper.
Sheriff Hooper just sounds better than Sheriff Brody.
But Quint sounds like a good shark hunter's name. Quint. Mm-hmm. Quint. Ah, Quint. Yeah, because it's like squint, and that's what old men do. They squint like this.
They do.
They do like
this.
Because
they can't see anything.
No, it's because they're always straining on the turlet. Like this. Trust me, I'm in my 40s. You got to be careful on the toilet when you get to a certain age. You have to be careful on the toilet.
I don't want to know this.
You have to be careful on the toilet after a certain age because you'll hurt your body.
That's true for most ages.
I mean, that is true. Don't push too hard. Don't push. You shouldn't push. If you're in a rush, just relax. Wait, it'll all get taken care of. Just like a giant shark. So we watch Jaws. I did put out on Twitter the idea that Jaws should be spelled J-O-Z-Z. And people took to it pretty well. People thought that was a pretty good idea.
Like, I think I was the first person who liked that tweet.
Just change it to Jaw. I mean, I guess that would make spelling Jaw very difficult. Just one Jaw. Because what would it be? J-O?
That'd be Joe.
Joe. I know. So you can't spell it that way. You'd have to spell it J-A-W. Then I guess you could spell it J-A-W-Z. We'll talk later on about what the Mad Magazine parody did with the title. Which I know is something you're looking forward to. Because it's really creative. Okay, so we sat down and we watched Jaws, a movie I have seen umpteen times, and a movie you had only ever tried to watch but hadn't made it through. So, what was your initial impression of Jaws?
It was fun to watch.
It was fun to watch. It's very different from, say, Spirit of the Beehive.
Jaws is only fun to watch if I'm watching it with someone else, though.
But you don't know that because you... Well, I guess you did try to watch it by yourself, but that was a long time ago.
Three times.
It's a long time ago. Why three times?
Because I wanted the experience of watching Jaws.
It is a group movie. I mean, it is a summer blockbuster movie that you're supposed to watch like in a big crowd.
It's just one of those movies that would just make me angry if I was watching it alone.
Yeah, well, I guess it did because you never finished watching it. So let's talk about these characters. Let's talk about this movie, this impossible film that shouldn't have been made, but it was. Everything that went wrong could have. We already touched on this. Shark didn't work. People didn't work.
People almost died.
People were furious about it being made. Spielberg spent the entire production worried that he was going to get fired. If he had been fired, he probably would have just gone back to making television movies and had a successful TV career, maybe. He certainly wouldn't have been given Close Encounters of the Third Kind to make, closely followed by E.T., closely followed by Riders of the Lost Ark, then E.T., then like one of the most successful film careers in movie history. But Jaws was a success. It was the biggest film of all time when it came out. And I can see why. It sort of appeals to everyone. Like, people took their families to see this, and they all had a good time.
Yeah, I love taking my children to see children getting murdered. I think it's my favorite thing to do.
It's a good lesson to teach a child early on.
Don't go into the ocean, or you're going to get killed by a shark.
This movie freaked people out and made people not want to go swimming. But it also, like, increased tourism to Martha's Vineyard, so it didn't have, like, this net negative effect. It also, you were saying earlier that this movie made people afraid of sharks and gave, like, a really negative impression of what shark behavior was like.
Mm-hmm. Well, it started the trend of shark movies. I'm not saying this movie was necessarily the one that created the fear. I'm saying that it created a genre that demonized sharks.
I would say it actually is fair to say that this movie began this. Actually, the novel, Peter Benchley said that he regrets writing Jaws because of the negative impact it had on people's impression of what sharks were like. It's a completely, not to say that there haven't been actual shark attacks. A little boy was just attacked in New England, or maybe it was Florida. But that's an aberration. Like, that rarely happens. Sharks don't like people.
My view on people getting attacked by animals is, don't go into places where you're going to be attacked by animals.
Okay, but you can understand that, like, people do, so every once in a while, someone does get attacked by a shark or a carnivorous sea animal when they're in a place that generally doesn't have any kind of attacks. Like, sometimes there is, like, that rando animal that's, like, you know, just like a rando person. Like, the animal equivalent of an unprovoked attack.
People don't belong in the ocean.
People don't belong in the ocean. That's why they die there.
If you're going in the ocean and you get attacked by a shark, I'm sorry, but it's your fault.
I will heavily disagree that it is the fault of a child for getting bitten by a shark.
Oh, no. I think if a child gets eaten by a shark, it's a child. It doesn't know any better. It's the parents' fault.
I will say
that taking their kid to a place where there's sharks.
I will say that if you're in the ocean and you get attacked by a shark if we went down to say like the Gulf of Mexico where you generally go, and I got stung by a man of war, I'd be like, my bad, I know that there's a man of war out here. If I was attacked by a shark, then I'd be like, okay, I'm pretty sure I shouldn't have this isn't shark infested waters. I would feel a little not ticked off at the shark and not ticked off at the beach. Just like that was just, I wouldn't feel like it was my fault. I'd be like, that was just a rando encounter. If I went to Australia off the coast of like one of the shark places and was attacked by a shark, then I'd be like, this is entirely on me. Probably shouldn't have done this. Or if I went to like a place where I knew there were sharks. What I'm saying is,
if you get attacked by the shark in the ocean, it's not the shark's fault.
It's never the shark's fault. The shark doesn't know.
That's like taking your 6-week-old, 9-week-old child on a hike to in the middle of the desert and they get eaten by dingoes.
Again, though, I'm not going to put that on the parents. I'm not putting that on the parents. That was a horrible incident that traumatized a woman and demonized her for many years. I'm not gonna haul that story into this. What I will say is,
I only know that story because of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
It was a woman whose baby was murdered by.
Yeah, it's a very animals. awful story.
It was an awful story. But what I am saying is that Peter Benchley regretted this novel. And you're right, it did kick off. It kicked off not only shark attack movies, but water attack movies, and then animal attack movies in general. Like, it really kickstarted that whole genre. And I'd say there is a place in the world for being, you know, being respectfully afraid of nature, being like, you know what, let's give nature a wide berth in a lot of places. But also, let's never see nature as our enemy, because that's like bad just all around.
Nature doesn't have the capability to be our enemy because it's not a force of good or evil.
Right. It's an overwhelming force.
Dolphins are what you should be afraid of.
You should be afraid of dolphins. And also any kind of bugs. Just be terribly afraid of them. All bugs. Jaws.
I have a very strong opinion on my feelings towards people getting involved in animal-related deaths because of how many animals are killed because they killed a person.
Right. We don't want that.
Like when someone tours a polar bear place and gets killed by a polar bear, and then the polar bear is killed, that pisses me off. Because you don't go into a polar bear territory, because you'll get killed by a polar bear.
Polar bear-atory. You're very right. So this is a movie called Jaws, and it's split into two parts.
Three parts?
It's split into two parts. There's like the first half, which is basically about this town reeling and responding, and not responding, to all these shark attacks. And then the second half, which is about, as you said while watching it, 3 Men in a Boat, which is hilarious because that's the name of a book. But it is 3 Men in a Boat. And it goes from being this horror movie to this action horror movie.
It's so long.
It's 2 hours long. It's a 2 hour long film.
No, the movie's not long.
What's long?
The scene where they're all in the boat is long.
It is. It's a solid part of the film. It's
very long.
But it's paced. It is this slowly building attention. And then it all explodes at the end. Literally and figuratively, all explodes at the end.
For me, the tension was gone the moment they tied a barrel to the shark.
Why did that dissipate the tension for you?
Because they tied a barrel to a shark.
But they did it to track the shark.
Yeah, now there's just a barrel floating in the water. That's not tense, that's funny.
It's tense for them!
Not for me.
There's this great moment where they shoot the harpoon into the shark and it pulls the barrel after it, which it's supposed to do. And their idea is that the shark will not be trackable because it can't pull the barrel under the water. And then it immediately pulls the barrel under the water. And it's this great moment because you're like, the shark's a lot stronger than we thought. It's a killer shark, 25-footer. There's also...
This big boy.
There's also
the shark.
There's a great scene where Hooper goes down in a cage. Very famous scene. Man goes into cage, cage goes into water, sharks in the water are shark. Very famous scene. Reproduced in the famous movie Clerks, where Randall has a chip in the salsa and he recreates it and he goes, salsa shark. And he has the shin. He goes, chip goes into shake. I don't remember how it goes. Chip goes into salsa, sharks in the salsa are shark. I don't remember how it goes. I haven't seen Clerks in many years. In any case, Hooper goes down into the cage. Shark tears the cage to pieces. Hooper hides behind the boat. They pull up the empty cage. Hooper was supposed to die in that scene. That was in the script, and I believe in the book. Hooper dies in the cage. And the way they filmed it was they got a little man, like a tiny man, who was a jockey and a stuntman. But he's like 4'9", very little man. And you can see him like in photos and stuff. And they built a little cage.
So he was as tall as my mom.
Tall as your mom. Very small. little man. They put him in a little tiny cage. They built a tiny version of the shark cage. And they put him down in the water. So when the shark would attack, and they coaxed an actual great white to attack the cage. But there's no 25-foot great whites like that just swimming around. So they got like it's like a 15-footer, like a regular average-sized great white. But they would to attack the little cage. So
that's
when you
three times my height.
So when you see this shark, it looks like a huge shark because they got this scaled-down man. They got a small boy.
So what if we just recreate this by getting a child?
Mm-hmm.
Putting the child in a cage.
That's what they did for Alien, which we'll talk
throwing
about.
Throwing the cage into the ocean and just let the sharks do what they do.
The man was not a child. The man was an adult man who had done
stunts.
Yeah,
but I mean,
how
many 15-foot great whites are there just everywhere?
Oh, I see. Like, what if you run out of, like, what if you want to do it with a smaller shark?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to get increasingly smaller men, you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
So for Alien, for the outdoor scenes in the spacesuits, they cast children, like little tiny children, and put them in spacesuits to make them look smaller next to the models. And you can't really notice it because they're stumbling around anyway, but if you think those are children, you can sort of watch them move and you're like, they kind of move like children. But we'll talk about that when we cover Alien.
We talk about Alien.
So
I'm very excited for that.
So what happened was the shark got stuck in a wire that was attached to this boat. This cage. But not when they were filming it with the little man. When they were filming it just with an empty cage. They shot it with an empty cage as well, just to sort of like get the shark in. But the shark got caught, and they were like, keep filming. This is amazing. So you couldn't see the wire, but you could see the shark like thrashing and smashing the cage, literally smashing this cage to pieces. And then they haul it up, and the cage is like busted to all hell. And they're like, we've got to use this footage. Unfortunately, there's no one in the cage. So we'll just have it be that Hooper escapes the cage, and then the shark destroys the cage because we got to use this amazing footage, but there's no man in it. So we'll just shoot some footage where Hooper escapes and just have him live. We'll just have him live because the footage is so awesome. We'll change the entire character arc because we want to use this awesome footage of a real shark. And it worked. I like that Hooper lives in the end.
It would have felt less like a triumph if Hooper hadn't lived.
Right. I know. I see that.
Because then everyone you like is dead.
Mm-hmm. Except for Brody. Brody lives. He's a good guy. Takes care of his family.
He's just a guy.
He is just a guy.
He's so much of a blank slate. You know, he's a dad.
Mm-hmm. He's a good
dad. And that he has some really bad anxiety around water.
Hates the water. So Brody is our, I wouldn't say he's our protagonist. The whole story revolves around him. He's a new sheriff at this place called Amity Island, fictional island.
He moved from New York.
Big city. And why does he move from New York?
Because it's a big city.
Because it's dangerous.
With a lot of crime.
Yeah, this is 1970s New York, and it was dangerous with a lot of crime. He was not exaggerating. This is the height of like the crime wave. And
there's still a lot of crime in New York. Actually, there might be less this past year.
Crime in New York was so bad at this time that a woman fended off her attacker by calling down the demon of the city, and he pulled the man into the air and tore him into pieces, and his blood rained down. That's how bad crime was in New York at this point.
The whimper of whipped dogs.
Yep. So yeah, Brody and his family, two kids, two little boys and his wife, they moved to Amity, and this shark starts killing people, kills this young woman.
I liked her.
Chrissy, right in front of her, I was going to say right in front of her boyfriend, right in front of a guy who didn't notice.
Wait, was she, I need to know, was she the woman whose hip was dislocated?
So the story gets exaggerated a lot about what happened to her. Today she was a stunt woman, an animal trainer. And her name was Susan Backlini. And the story was always that she got severely injured filming the scene. Later on, she was like, that was exaggerated. I was fine. She was like, I was fine. The worst thing that happened to her was actually when they were recording her screams, Spielberg was like, we've got to sound like you're actually drowning now while you're screaming. Like we need to sound. So what we'll do is throw your head back and scream. And then while you're screaming, we'll just pour water in your mouth when we're recording the screams. And Richard Dreyfuss was like, and that today is called waterboarding. Because they literally waterboarded her while she was screaming. And it worked. I mean, she didn't complain about it. Like she knew it was going to happen and it was horrible, but it got when she screams as a character in the looping, that's how they got that sound. She actually was screaming while they were pouring water on her face. But according to her, she was not injured during that scene. that that was an exaggeration. So believe what you will. Maybe her memory has painted over it. But yeah, her name is Susan Baclani. She's 74 now, and the reason she got cast was they were like, A, she's a stunt woman, so she can do everything, and B, she agreed to be naked on screen. And she was like, I'll do it. I'll take off my clothes. I'll do my own stunts. So that's how she got the part. But it's a heck of a beginning, heck of an intro to the show.
I would like to say that if I was with a girl on a beach and she was getting attacked in the water or like drowning, I would immediately go and help her. But I can't say that because I wouldn't.
So you find the most sympathetic character for you is the guy who passes out while his date is dying.
No, I think getting drunk or stoned on a beach is a dumb idea in the first place because, you know, the ocean sucks. So I have no sympathy for him. I feel sympathetic towards her, but like, I can't say I would do anything different. I wouldn't pass out on the beach. I'd probably be like, I'm going to go get help.
Yeah, so he passes out. I keep saying her boyfriend, just some guy she met at this party passes out, and her body washes up on the beach the next day, and it's in pieces. And the mayor and everyone is just like, it was a boating accident. She drowned. She got hit by a boat. It happens. The end. But Brody sees the body and is like, I think this might be a shark.
You see these ridges, it's tearing on the wounds? That looks like it was caused by teeth. Mm-hmm. Not like a smooth boat propeller.
Mm-hmm. But nobody wants to close the beaches. And why?
Because it's 4th of July.
4th of July weekend, baby. Can't shut the beaches down. We got bands to perform. We got tourists to visit.
Summer vacation.
Summer vacay. Gotta hop in that beach. Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I don't like to go to the beach. But it's tourist dollars. This is their economy. And mm-hmm. The mayor, you know he's corrupt. How do you know he's corrupt?
His shirt.
His
with
jacket.
Anchors on it.
He's got the suit with anchors all over it. And you take one look at him and you're like, the guy's a scumbag. Also, he spends too much time on his hair.
Also, he only ever wears two shirts.
Yes, he has two suits, and they're both amazing. So, that's the Mayor Vaughn, played by Murray Hamilton. He's a regular, he's a character actor. You see him all over the place. I should say that Chief Brody is played by Roy Scheider, who got cast in this movie. They were having the worst time finding a Brody because they just needed just some guy. Like, they needed an everyman. It couldn't be anyone too famous. The person, Charlton Heston, wanted to play this role so bad that when he didn't get cast, he like stopped speaking to Spielberg. Like, he wanted to play Brody so bad. And Spielberg was like, I cannot cast Charlton Heston as Brody. He is too powerful a man. Like, he is so, like, such a presence. So they went through all these actors and he was like, no, none of these guys are working out. What happened was he went to a party and Roy Scheider was there. And he ends up talking to Roy Scheider at this party and he's like, I gotta tell you, man, I'm having the worst time casting this part. I need a guy who's just like a good guy and will just play a guy. And I can't find a guy who can play this part. And I'm at my wit's end. And Roy Scheider's like, well, what about me? What about me, Steven Spielberg? And Spielberg's like, I can't cast you though. You play heavies. Like, you just got through playing like a pretty intense guy. And Roy Scheider's like, I play the man. And Spielberg's like, okay. And the studio was like, I don't know about this Roy Scheider. People think he's a bad guy. And he's like, I think he can play just a guy. And he came in and apparently Roy Scheider is like who held the film together. Like, while everyone else was freaking out, they were like, Roy Scheider was like a rock. He never complained. He was like nice and just he was like everyone's dad. Everyone loved him. And he's the only reason the film got finished. Which I love.
You need a guy to play a guy.
You need a guy to this guy to play some guy. And he did a good job just playing a likable guy. The opposite was true for Richard Dreyfuss, who played Hooper. Richard Dreyfuss, mm-hmm. They asked him to play the role. He said no. He's like, no, I was in American Graffiti. Everybody loves me, American Graffiti. It was George Lucas was like, you should cast Richard Dreyfuss. He was awesome in American Graffiti. He's like, no, thank you. I am going to be a big famous star now. I'm going to be a lead. I do not need to play part of an ensemble. I have this major motion picture coming out that everybody's going to love. And they're all going to know that I am the man. I am the best person in the world. I'm going to be like a leading man from now on. Thank you very much. So He has this movie coming out called The Apprenticeship of Duddy Kravitz. He was playing Duddy, the lead role. And he was like, Duddy Kravitz is going to make me the famousest man in the world. It's going to be amazing. He goes to a preview of Duddy Kravitz and he's like, oh no, I can't act. I'm the worst actor in the world. I'm terrible. He goes groveling back to Steven Spielberg and is like, will you please cast me as Hooper? I just turned in the worst performance of my life. I think my career is over. And what's amazing about Dreyfuss is he never stopped feeling that way about his own performances. He always thought he was the worst actor in the world and that his career was over.
I think that's true for a lot of artists.
Yeah. And as we, I think we mentioned, this role was written for a tall, handsome, blonde, like, strapping lad, and that is not Richard Dreyfuss.
That's why I think the name Brody works better.
Why?
Because Brody is like the name you give to the surfer guy.
But he ends up he's not cast that way. He's cast as a Schmendrick.
I'm just talking for the character, like in general.
He's like a Schlemiel. He reminds me
of Hotchins from Bones.
I do not know Bones.
That's okay.
I know Dry Bones from Super Mario Brothers. But I don't know Bones. That's the skeleton turtle, by the way.
I know.
It's the Super Mario Brothers. But what ended up happening is Spielberg basically made the role Steven Spielberg. Like this bespectacled, nervous guy. And that's and he works. But what I like about his role is he comes in as the marine biologist expert. And there's that whole autopsy scene where he's looking at the part, what's left of the body. Mm-hmm. And I love his performance in that scene where he's like, he is so like about to throw up half the time, but he is so professional and just looking at this body, and he gets so furious at Brody. He's like, why didn't you report this? Why didn't you call this? I love his performance in this because he's a kind of a nervous guy, but then he takes this very seriously and he's so upset about what is happening on this beat. I don't know. I just think it's a great performance. It's not just funny. He could just play it for laughs and he doesn't.
No, I like him.
Yeah. So the shark is going on. They bring in a bunch of fishermen to catch the shark. They catch a shark, a pretty big shark, but it's not the right shark.
Wrong shark, guys.
Yep, they do catch a big shark. That was a real shark, by the way. That was dead, and they shipped it over. And on a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you think that dead shark smelled?
All of it.
All of it. It smelled so much that they were having trouble not throwing up on the set from how much
you could tell
this shark smelled. They were like, also like, as it was hanging there, like they kept having to like push its guts back into it because they kept almost spilling out of the mouth. They were like, the shark is falling apart. Shark's falling apart.
That's what happens when you get a corpse. That's a nightmare.
Yeah, that was corpse shark. But hey, it looked like a dead shark and it worked. And
it didn't look like a dead shark. It was a dead shark.
It was probably the deadest shark that's ever been put on screen. So people keep dying. People keep dying from the shark. So the girl dies. A little boy dies.
Technically, only 3 people die from the shark.
Well, in the initial deaths. Kills the girl. It kills a little boy, Alex Kintner.
Kills a dog.
It does kill the dog. You see, like, this guy's just looking for his dog, and that's it. Like, but you're like,
you know, it's funny that they were like, you know what we shouldn't do? We shouldn't have a dog death on screen, but let's watch this little boy get murdered.
The expression blood fountain gets thrown around a lot, but this little boy becomes a blood fountain. You see
I've
him
never
like
heard that expression before.
You see him get like he's like ow, and then the next thing you know, the ocean explodes in a geyser of blood and viscera. In front of everyone. And the woman who plays Alex Kintner's mom, Mrs. Kintner, I believe they referred to her, Lee Fierro, said that the most distressing thing while filming this was that scene, because you just saw, like, you're sitting on the beach during filming and you just see this little boy, what looks like this little boy, get torn to pieces by a shark. Like, because everything happened under the water. And she said it was, for everyone involved, it was, you see this, it was because the little boy who played Alex was there. Like, they were like, we're just going to pull you down and then blood's going to explode out of the water. So there you go. And he was like, okay. And so everyone who's watching the filming and all the kids in the water, you just see the little boy get pulled down, screaming, blood explodes. And she was like, that's all you need as an actor. That's all you needed. You didn't have to like act anymore. You were upset about seeing this boy die in front of you. But you were angry at Mrs. Kintner. Why?
Because she yelled at Brody. Because she yelled at her. I mean, I get it. I'm sympathetic towards her. I just have a thing. It's a pet peeve of mine.
Yes.
In a lot of television. Mm-hmm. When grieving people start screaming at the main character about how it's all their fault.
Yes.
And again, I get it.
Right. Because, if you were in that situation, you'd probably do the same.
Yeah. It's just annoying to watch on camera.
It is.
Which
it
sounds horrible.
No, say. I understand. I can feel the same way. I can feel the same way. This is going to sound even worse. I can feel the same way in like true crime stories. Like when the parents and family of victims get irrationally angry at the people who are trying to solve the crime or whatever. I understand. I actually do completely sympathize, because you don't act. You do like direct your anger at who's right there. But also I'm like, this isn't his fault.
I think that part of the true crime thing is that true crime stories are presented as stories and not as
right.
You're not watching the real people. You're just getting like.
Well, even when it is the real people, I completely sympathize with your side too. I'm like, yeah, like she comes yelling at your protagonist, and then she slaps him in the face, and
it didn't help that the guy who refused to close the beach was standing right there.
Right. So the reason everyone was on the beach in the first place is because the mayor refused to close, to shut down, and
wasn't she one of the people who didn't want to close the beach in the first place?
Mrs. Kintner?
Yeah.
Well, nobody wanted to close the beach. Like, that was the thing. Like, everyone was like...
He was the only one, like, advocating for the closure of the beach.
Right. So Lee Fierro, she was a theater actress. And sadly, she died last April of coronavirus at the age of 91. So, you know, RIP to Lee Fierro. She would always talk about that scene because she had to slap Roy Scheider 17 times. And she didn't like to swear, because she didn't believe in swearing. She didn't like swearing.
Wow, she sounds like not me.
But she had to slap him so many times. She felt so bad. He had to like not, the hardest thing, if you've ever been slapped on stage, the hardest thing is not flinching, because you know it's coming. But she said that people would stop her all the time and ask her to slap them, because she was so famous for this. But she only did three movies. She did Jaws. She did Jaws the Revenge, which is the fourth Jaws film. And she did it playing Mrs. Kintner again, obviously. And she did a movie I've never heard of called The Mistover Tale in 2016. So she mostly did theater, but she seemed like a pretty cool person. I'm sorry that she died of coronavirus. That's terrible.
Maybe people should start closing the beaches again.
Yeah, it's ironic because people kept talking about Jaws as like a coronavirus parallel.
It kind of is, except for there's not a shark that's killing it. Yeah. Well, you know, it kind of is, because the government is still killing people by refusing to close beaches.
Yeah, yeah. So so what's funny is that Hooper didn't. So there's Hooper. We have Hooper, who's the young guy, Richard Dreyfuss. We have Brody, who's the police chief. As much as you hate their names.
I don't hate their names. I just think they'd be better if they were switched.
You are
the only one who hates names.
And Quint is our final character. He's the salty old sea dog who comes in, local fisherman, says he'll kill the shark for like what, $20,000?
I don't like him.
And Robert Shaw played him. Robert Shaw is a British actor, and he was he's an Academy Award winner. Incredibly famous actor, incredibly famous acting family. Robert Shaw, by the way, he had 10 children, married multiple times. He had a famous grandchild who went on to portray Artemis Fowl in the failed Artemis Fowl movie for Disney. So the Shaw legacy continues. But yeah, Robert Shaw came on. He was a He immediately got into character on screen and off, and treated Richard Dreyfuss like garbage, just like Quint does in the movie. But Richard Dreyfuss said that stories of Shaw's abuse were greatly exaggerated for promotional reasons, that they actually had a wonderful relationship in their dressing rooms. But once they hit that sound, like once they hit the set, Shaw was just all over Richard Dreyfuss. But they had a good time. I mean, apparently they had a good time. He died, I believe, soon after the movie was made. Yeah, he didn't live much longer after this. He had a heart attack at the age of 51, 1978. While driving, he didn't feel good. He stopped the car and he just died right on the road. It was bad news for everyone. He had a lot of health problems. He had a rough personal life. And it was an alcoholic for most of his life. So he had a hard time. He was from a school of acting that really glorified the alcoholic British actor, basically, that ended a lot of lives. I mean, do you remember when we first started this and like everyone died in the age of 51? Like no one lived past their 50s because of this. So yeah, he was kind of the tail end of that acting legacy. He's not a likable character, but he is a powerful character.
Sorry, I was trying to figure out what the name Robert Shaw reminded me of so much.
And?
There's a Criminal Minds episode.
Of course there's a Criminal Minds episode.
About two people who killed a little boy named Robbie Shaw or Bobby Shaw or something. And I was like, I couldn't remember if it was BuzzFeed Unsolved or Criminal Minds. So I couldn't remember if it was a real cold case or a fake cold case. So that's just what I was staring into space doing, trying to figure out which one it was.
Well, that's great. So so Quint shows up and they finally decide we're going to hire this guy. We're going to take him out on the sea. Brody's going to go with him. Hooper's going to go with him. And they're going to kill this shark. And that's like...
Why did they decide that Brody was going with?
They demanded he didn't want to go, but he was like, you're going.
No, I thought it was the opposite. I thought he demanded to go and they were like, you really shouldn't go.
You hate the water. He did hate the water. Yeah.
And his wife was like, you really shouldn't go. And he was like, I'm going to go. And the captain was like, you're going to get in the way. And he's like, no, it's fine.
Right. Because, on the 4th of July, what happens is these kids pull a prank with a fake shark and that distracts everyone while Michael Brody, the older son of the Brodies, is out in the lagoon. They call it the pond. And that's when the shark shows up in the lagoon and he kills a guy who warns the kids. You don't see that attack, but you do see the guy's leg float to the bottom of the ocean. And that's we're just like, okay, we got to get rid of this shark. And I think that Brody kind of takes it personally. Like that's kind of his like,
I'd take it personally if it was my kid in the water at the time.
But it takes three more movies before it becomes personal. With Jaws the Revenge, this time it's personal. The movie where you find out that the sharks, because it's just a different shark every time, have been actually targeting the Brody family. Just so you know, that is actually...
If an entire subspecies of critter had a vendetta against your family.
For no reason. Because
like if only emperor penguins were going to attack your family, very slim chance of you ever encountering one. But if you do, you'd better run.
Right. Well, that's also with Jaws. Very slim chance of this great white shark getting to you in these different parts of the world. Oh, by the way, Jaws 3 takes place at SeaWorld. Shark still manages to get to them there.
Why are you going into the exhibits at SeaWorld, friend?
Well, I was going to say we'll get to that, so they decide to go out on the water and kill this shark. And we know it's not going to be easy, but boy, it's a lot less easy than they think it's going to be.
Hey, you know, the city or the town or the village or the hovel,
yes, the
whatever
hovel.
It is.
They all live in one hovel.
You know, we only ever see three buildings, so...
We see the whole downtown. We see a marching band go through.
But it could be props. Could be just stand-up houses, cardboard houses.
This was filmed in Martha's Vineyard. This was filmed in an actual town, and they were disrupted greatly by the filming of this movie. In any case, so...
The town doesn't have to pay the $20,000 at the end of the movie.
Oh, that's right. Good for
so
them.
So they save a lot of money.
Good for them. So they go out on this boat, and they're throwing out chum. The boat's called the Orca, by the way. They're throwing out chum. They think they're going to hook the shark with a fishing line. And that's when the shark appears next to the boat, and they realize that the thing's a lot bigger. It's 25 feet long. It's 3 tons. They harpoon it with the barrel, and that's when the shark pulls the barrel underwater and disappears. Like, that's our first indication that this thing is a lot worse than they had even imagined. The shark is massive. And when you see the shark swim next to the boat, it's a big shark. It's a very large shark. We also have the benefit, even though the mechanical shark never worked, the shark that they nicknamed Bruce, named it after Steven Spielberg's lawyer. And in the sequels, they named those sharks after other lawyers, which is like, okay, now you're getting weird. The great thing about a mechanical shark, even one that doesn't work very well, is sharks don't look real. Real sharks look like fake animals. They're so stiff and expressionless, and their jaws just do go up and down like, gong, 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 gong.
Yeah.
That a mechanical shark is a pretty real looking shark. But this shark does look pretty rad when you see it. The shark goes off, and then we get the most haunting story in the entire history of a film. We discover why Quint is so dead set on getting this shark, and it's because he was on board the USS Indianapolis, the ship, the giant ship, the heavy cruiser that transported the atomic bomb, the atomic bombs to Hiroshima. It was torpedoed in July by a Japanese submarine. Went down, and it resulted in the greatest single loss of life at sea from a single ship in the history of the U.S. Navy. But it was not the sinking of the ship that killed the men. It was, so 300 men went down with the ship. The 890 who were left bobbing in the ocean died of exposure, dehydration, saltwater poisoning, and...
I don't know.
Shark attacks!
Oh, right.
Shark attacks. Only 300 men survived the sinking of the USS Indianapolis. True story. But when he tells the story at the end of it, you were like, that's not true.
Yeah.
And I'm like, actually, it was true. Not in the novel.
That just seems
though.
Like a lot of shark attacks.
There's a lot of shark attacks. What happened is because it was a secret mission, no one came to their rescue for like a long time because no one knew they were out there.
Did they die from the sharks or did they die from hypothermia and then get eaten by the sharks?
Many of them died from the sharks.
How do they know that?
Because the survivors would hear them screaming as they were being eaten alive. That's how, a lot of them were eaten by sharks who had died. But by the sharks. A lot of them were eaten. M-dash by the sharks, close M-dash who had died. Sharks are generally attracted to movement. The men were moving in the water to keep warm. They would die that way. So the survivors were like, and that's part of his story, is hearing these men screaming for their lives and you couldn't do anything. And want to talk about PTSD. They had PTSD. This story wasn't in the novel. It was very famously a source of contention as to who put this story. Carl Gottlieb, the main screenwriter for the movie, wanted to take a lot of credit. Robert Shaw himself took a lot of credit for it. It kind of went around and around, but the main idea was that it was like a 12-page story, like monologue, that was then whittled down to like a 3-page monologue, and that Robert Shaw kind of finessed it and put his own spin on it emotionally and condensed it, made it something that to sound like something that Quint would tell.
Hated this scene.
Why?
It was very boring. And I hate to say it, I just didn't care.
On the other side, it's one of the greatest scenes in film history.
Is it? Because it is. I didn't care at all about Quint.
I'm gonna contradict you there by saying you're wrong. And it is an incredible scene.
Sure it is.
However you feel about it, it's a very emotional scene for the character, and it explains kind of why he is the way he is. And when Jaws was released, the men on board the USS Indianapolis who saw it, heard about this movie and were like, wait a minute, there's people talking about the USS Indianapolis. We didn't know that people knew about this. It had just been declassified. It had only recently been declassified. This was a secret story. These guys didn't talk about it. And word got out that this Jaws movie had a character who was on the USS Indianapolis. They would go see it and just be like, yeah, that's exactly it. That's not only like what happened. That is exactly what we're dealing with and how we felt. Thank you for talking about it, like, and taking it seriously, not treating it like a joke or treating it like for shock value.
See, it's a good scene for that reason. It's just when you're so separated from that event, at least for me, and when you don't care about the character, because I'm not gonna lie, I didn't care about him.
I found him really abrasive and just mean.
Well, see, to me, like, that story, I don't know. To me, that story is like, if you don't care about the character, that story is like, oh, like, this goes a long way to...
It didn't make me care about the character.
Well, okay, then.
Maybe I'm just... I'm feeling very contrarian today.
Well, regardless, it does make his death at the end of the movie that much more horrifying and tragic.
You know, I didn't see the parallels between his story and his death.
Because initially, originally, Quint dies. Spoilers, Quint dies. Quint originally dies when he gets trapped by stuck in the harpoon. Like, he gets attached to the harpoon. It goes into the shark, and then the shark pulls him under. And that's it.
Quint,
but it's a parallel to Ahab from Moby Dick, like, because he's supposed to be kind of an Ahab character, like, obsessed with killing the shark. The shark pulls him under and he drowns. During filming, they were like, let's not do that. That's a little anticlimactic, and let's have him actually be eaten feet first by the shark, because that's basically, this is a horror movie, and that's Quint's only fear. Like, that is, he is being... He's lived all these decades with this horror in his mind, and he dies reliving this horror. And it's kind of terrible. It's kind of he's screaming and he's like panicking and reliving his like PTSD while he's dying.
As much as I don't like the character, I did feel that scene was pretty horrific.
It's pretty horrific. Like, it's pretty graphic. This movie saves its like blood and guts for when it counts.
Mm-hmm.
And it counts there. So what happens is, their ship gets attacked by the shark. He tears it apart. Eventually, their motor is, their engine is burnt out. The shark keeps smashing the ship. They keep hitting it with these more barrels, and the shark keeps like pulling more and more barrels with it. Finally, the shark just smashes up the ship so much it starts sinking. Quint literally slides into its mouth. Hooper goes down into scuba gear at one point to inject the shark with poison using a hypodermic spear, which I didn't know existed. That's when the shark attacks the cage, and Hooper originally was supposed to get killed, but he gets knocked out of the cage, and that's it. Like, we don't see him again until the end.
Hypodermic spear at the bottom of the ocean just with a bunch of poison in it.
With a bunch of poison in it. Hope nobody flows out to the ocean and accidentally steps on that spear. You'll end up like the girl from the Blue Lagoon who stepped on the poisonous fish. Which happens in the Blue Lagoon. She steps on poison.
Maybe that's
fish.
I'll bring that up later.
and so, Quint gets killed. Brody is left. By the way, they have these scuba tanks that are full of explosive gas. And that's sort of like shown, like, be careful with these tanks. They could explode.
That's one thing about this movie that I was like, okay, I get it. They keep mentioning the explosive gas tanks.
It's a pressurized...
Just keep hammering away at the explosive gas tanks.
You shouldn't hammer away at an explosive gas tank, by the way.
That's a bad idea.
I'm
like, okay, I get it. You could have just left it the first time and you would have brought it back. And I'd be like, oh, dang, I forgot about the explosive gas tanks. But now you've hammered it in so much.
The boat's going down. It swallowed Quint, killed Quint. It's up on the deck, and Brody... grabs one of the explosive tanks and throws it at the shark, and it lodges in the shark's mouth. Shark swims away. The ship's going down. Brody is hanging on for his life. He has his rifle, and the shark comes swimming up. It has the explosive tank in its mouth. Brody takes aim, shoots the tank, says, smile, you son of a... I'm not pausing because I'm not going to say the word. He doesn't actually say the word. He just says, smile, you son of a... shoots. The tank explodes. The shark explodes.
If I was that shark, I would have... not gone near the boat. I would have just gone by the beach and eaten more people.
He had a tank in his mouth.
Only three people.
He needed help getting the tank out of his mouth.
No, I mean, like, before that. Because the only three people who crap are all in that boat.
So you would just bye, and, like, go and,
yeah,
like...
see you later.
See you later, everyone.
They'd come back, like, we didn't find the shark, and the town would be deserted.
He eats everyone in the town?
Yeah.
Oh, no. They keep going back into the ocean.
At the mayor's insistence. Or the town is now a cult that's worshipping this eldritch.
Worshipping the shark.
Worshipping the shark and feeding people to it who don't want to worship the shark.
Better idea. So at the end, Brody is stuck on the flotsam. Then Hooper, like, bloop, pops up. And he's like, where's Quint?
Hey.
And Brody's like, he didn't make it. And then they start...
Cool.
And then they start paddling back to pack the shore. And that's the end of the movie. Yeah, a very different ending from the novel, but it, I think it works better. I like that Hooper survives. So the movie comes out, goes on to break all box office records on a budget of $9 million. It goes on to make, I assume this is worldwide. So it makes $7 million in its first weekend. It grosses $21 million in its first 10 days. It grosses $100 million in its first 2 months. And then it overtakes The Godfather, sails past that record. It becomes the first movie to earn $100 million in theatrical rentals. Its initial release ultimately brings in $123 million. They re-release it in 76 and 79. It brings in $133 million in total. Keeps breaking records, breaks worldwide records. At the end of the day, Jaws, on a $9 million budget, pulls in, after everything is said and done, $472 million. This is after video sales and everything. But it is a huge movie. Huge movie. No one had ever seen anything. And paves the way, basically, for Star Wars. Because there's a lot of merchandising around this. There's shirts, there's hats, there's books. People are like, just Jaws crazy. And this kind of gets the merchandising thing going. They're like, okay, big movie, a lot of merchandise. So when Star Wars comes out, even though Star Wars initially fumbles out of the gate with merchandise, the machinery is in place. They're like, okay, we can do this. But there weren't any like Jaws action figures or anything. Like that hadn't happened yet.
I want one of those.
Now you could probably buy toys, but at the time...
I want a recreation. I want like a recreation of the shark dragging the child under the water.
I am sure that exists. There's probably a Funko Pop of a child with its body missing.
I'm joking. We didn't even mention
Lorraine Gary, who played Ellen Brody, the wife. She goes on to be in Jaws 2, and she goes on to be the lead in Jaws 4. She
skips SeaWorld.
SeaWorld is about the older son, Michael Brody, who works at SeaWorld and is being chased by the shark there.
How are you being chased by a shark in SeaWorld?
But it does have two heroic dolphins who fight the shark.
Dolphins are the only ones with the capacity for evil because sharks are dumb.
Also, Jaws 3 was in 3D. So that's
Was it called Jaws 3D?
It was called Jaws 3D. By the way... Jaws 2 comes out a couple of years later. It's rushed into production. Spielberg decides not to do it because he had such a hard time working on this movie. He said, like, I can't do sequels. I don't want to get thought of as a sequel director. I don't want to be a monster director. But then later on, he was like, I actually would have done it. It was so hard making Jaws 2. So they set out to make Jaws 2, much bigger budget, same screenwriter. Actually, same initial screenwriter, the same guy they brought on first who wrote a script. They're like, this doesn't work. They brought him on for Jaws 2. Then they brought back the same rewrite screenwriter, Carl Gottlieb. Like, can you do it again? Can you actually make this? He's like, yeah, I'll do it again. But the director of Jaws 2 was Jeanette Zwark. Jeanette Zwark.
Was he evil?
No, he had done a movie called Bug that was kind of this like minor horror film that had done well. He would go on to direct Somewhere in Time, Supergirl, which bombed, Santa Claus the Movie, which bombed, kind of ended his career.
We don't talk about Santa Claus the Movie.
I saw it in the theater. Santa Claus the Movie, which bombed. And then Jaws 3D was kind of a joke. Jaws 3D was interesting though, because when Jaws 3 was, they were like, okay, now, but Jaws 2... Jaws 2 is a decent film, by the way. It's pretty much a retread of Jaws 1. Another shark shows up. Chief Brody has to fight the shark.
Same cast?
Richard Dreyfuss didn't come back for it. He was, now at this point, he was like, I'm doing other movies. He was tied up. He's like, I don't really want to make another Jaws movie. But Roy Scheider came back for it. He was game. He's really good in it. It's not Jaws, but it's entertaining. It's actually, if you want another good shark movie, it's a good shark movie. Jaws 3 is a mess. Terrible
SeaWorld.
It's in 3D. Terrible special effects. Just awful. You do get some dolphins though. Always nice. And there's some
dolphins
other
dolphins are demons.
But they're fun to watch. Jaws 4. But what's funny is this famous story is that Jaws 3 was in pre-production. Like, what should we do for Jaws 3? The original idea, and an idea that actually went a little ways. The National Lampoon guys who did comedy movies were like, give it to us. And the original title was Jaws 3, Humans 0. And it was going to be a joke. It was going to be a parody of Jaws, like a big satirical comedy of Jaws. And the studio was like, I think this can work. I think we can make a funny Jaws movie. Spielberg showed up and was like, if you do this, I'll never work for you again. You cannot do that. Like, that's the story. Like, Spielberg was like, you can't. No, I like Jaws. You can't do this. So they had to pull it. They did Jaws 3 and people were like, this isn't very good. Jaws 4 comes out in like 87. Jaws the Revenge. This time it's personal. Lorraine Gary is the lead. Chief Brody is dead by this point. The shark didn't kill him, but the fear of the shark killed him is what's going on. Takes place in like the Bahamas. And it's like got this like
drug. Why do they keep moving to it's got this Oceanside residences?
Drug smuggling subplot. It's got Michael Caine, who famously said, I never saw the movie, but I did see the house that the beach house the movie bought, and it's wonderful. He hated it. He was like just drunk the whole time. That movie is so boring and incomprehensible. There's hardly any shark in it. It's mostly this drama about this woman trying to get over the death of her husband. It's got a huge, it's stupid cat. It's terrible. It's so dull. But like you said, it did spawn a bunch of imitators. The movie Orca came out. It was pretty successful. And I actually like Orca. It's about a killer whale whose partner gets killed. And so it starts seeking revenge on the people who killed its partner. Piranha was a Jaws ripoff by Roger Corman. Went on to have its own sequel, its own remake, and its own sequel remake. And then like, don't even start to be on like Night of the Grizzly and Day of the Animals, like all these movies about killer animals that came out. So, and as we all know, killer shark movies still going on today.
You know what my favorite shark movies are?
What?
The Sci-Fi Channel ones, because they're so bad.
If you want a great, okay, there is a movie called, I think it's called Shark House or House Shark. And it's about a house that has a shark in it. And I started watching it on Amazon because I was like, this looks, I thought it was going to be like a sci-fi original movie. It does have a terribly low budget. House Shark, the shark comes up out of the toilet and stuff, mm-hmm. kill people. It is a hard R gore fest. It is one of the goriest movies I've seen. Plus, it's just like, it starts off feeling like a kid's movie. It feels like a kid's movie, like a Nickelodeon film almost. Like, it's goofy and like, there's a shark in the house. As soon as the woman sits naked on a toilet and gets like eviscerated from below and like organs go everywhere, you're like, oh no. And then it just keeps going. And if you're looking for something that is not Jaws, I recommend House Shark.
Toilet Shark is a better title.
But I know the big question you're wondering is, what was Jaws called when Mad Magazine did it? Do you want to know?
It's called Butt or something.
No, it's not called Butt. It was the same. We're not talking about Cracked Magazine. What was Jaws called when Mad Magazine did it? It was called Jawed.
That was a lot less offensive than I thought it was going to be.
It's obvious that people get their kicks out of seeing other people die in every horrible way possible, which includes being jawed. J-A-W.
You know, I really thought that was going somewhere way more offensive, so apostrophe I can't be mad.
Do you want to know what Chief Brody is called, though? Do you want to know what...
Is it like Chief Booger?
No. Do you know what Chief Brody is called?
What?
Chief... Chief Brooding.
He doesn't brood in the movie, though. He's just a guy. They could have said Chief Boring, and that would have been more accurate.
I thought it was going to be Chief Grody. His partner, Deputy Hendrix, is called Schmendrix. The mayor is Mayor... I don't know why this is supposed to be funny. Mayor Vault.
Because he cares about money? I don't know.
Captain Quint is called Squint, by the way. That pretty much wrote itself. And Hooper. Hooper. Do you want to take a guess on Hooper?
Pooper?
What?
Pooper?
Not Pooper. Matt Hooper is called... Claude Hopper.
I should write their jokes for them. They're so much funnier when I'm
Claude talking. Hopper. So the whole parody is about how gross it is. And
my names would have been much better for that.
And the joke when the shark attacks the cage is that Hooper drops the needle, which actually happens in the movie. I don't know mm-hmm. why that's supposed to be funny. He's like, "I dropped the needle." And you're like, "Oh, that's what happens." And it doesn't end with a shark blowing up. It ends with them writing the shark dies, but it ends with them writing the belly shark. So I'm wondering if the parody was written before they rewrote the ending so that the shark blows up. I don't know. In any case, that's the Mad Magazine. Jawed, everyone, is called Jawed.
I can't be mad because I thought it was going to be way more offensive.
You thought it was going to be offensive. But yep. No, Jawed. I'm sure Cracked Magazine probably did a really offensive one, but I don't have the Cracked Magazine parody on me. Also, it's drawn by Mort Drucker, and it looks great. There was also, they never did a Marvel adaptation. They did a Marvel Comics adaptation of Jaws 2. And if you want a boring Marvel comic, read the Marvel Comics adaptation of Jaws 2, because it's just not an exciting story. Doesn't translate into comics very well.
I don't think this one would either.
No, it's not. It's not kinetic. It's not like an action-packed movie. It's just. It's
It'd
just
be a lot of three guys on a boat.
It is. It's three guys on a boat. That's pretty much. But do you ever wonder what why Guillermo del Toro liked this movie so much?
It's made by Steven Spielberg.
It is made by Steven Spielberg.
Is it because of? No, that wouldn't make sense. That was only hypothesized a few years ago. I don't know why.
Because it's one of the five scariest movies. That's literally all I could find on this. That he thinks Fair it's enough. One of the five scariest movies. The end. There's no other information. Like, I searched high and low.
This is his ecstasy of influence, right?
Yes.
It's not necessarily his favorite movies of all time.
But I was just hoping there'd be more. I mean, he spoke about it. Basically, he says, like, it's scary. It's super scary. He doesn't show the shark. And he worked really hard on it, and it got made come hell or high water. Like, that was it.
I mean, to be completely fair, there's no way in hell that any filmmaker isn't somewhat inspired by the work that was done on Jaws.
That's true.
It's just one of those movies.
He rewrote.
It defined a genre and created mm-hmm. a type of movie.
He rewrote the playbook on how films were made.
Yeah.
Against, I guess you have to be impressed that he did it against all odds. It's like 27-year-old guy who was like handed this motion picture and was like, I'm going to make a movie about a shark, and it's going to try to make it elevate it beyond the horror film they wanted and make it a movie mm-hmm. about people, about family, and about a squinty man named Quint and a clawed hopper named Hooper. Speaking of squinty man, speaking of clawed hoppers, what is the next movie in the ecstasy of influence?
I don't know, but I'm not done talking about this one yet, so.
Well, we're going to have to be done because time is over.
But I have so many things I want to say that have nothing to do with the plot of the movie, but have everything to do with mysteries.
Oh yeah. So what did you want to add to this? I forgot about this.
I wanted to talk about the, there's an extra in the movie. This has nothing to do with anything we've been talking about. I just think it's really interesting. And Joe Hill thinks it's interesting, too. There's an extra in the movie that Joe Hill noticed while he was watching. It's about 54 minutes in. Mm-hmm. And a few hours away from this, not long after the movie was filming there, a body was found. She's never been identified. She's called Lady of the Dunes. And next to the body was a pile of clothes, a pair of jeans and a blue bandana. And the extra in the scene is wearing jeans and a blue bandana. And Joe Hill says, you know, it's unlikely that this is the woman, but it would be an interesting little ghost story, and it would be an interesting little last look into this woman's life. Unfortunately, Spielberg wasn't a huge director at the time, so there's no log of people who were the extras, and she could have just wandered in and been in the scene
right.
because of where it was filming. But it is an interesting little tidbit of information that I like.
It is a spooky little
mm-hmm.
just like, I remember when it happened a few years ago, it was like 2018 when that like came mm-hmm. out. And I remember being like, ooh, that's creepy. And like you said, Joe Hill was like, it's probably not the case, but it did bring attention back to this cold case, mm-hmm. which had been like, it's just been sitting there for a while. And anything that brings attention back to a cold case and maybe gets that thing solved, to me that's only a positive. So yeah, thanks for sharing that. I forgot about that.
Yeah, I just think it's fun.
It is fun. Murder is not fun.
No.
But it's an interesting tidbit. Mm-hmm.
I also wanted to disclaim my earlier comments on placing the blame on family members when people die in.
We know what you meant.
Yeah, there was. I want to say that I feel bad for these people, and I don't think they deserved what happened to them.
Right. Yeah.
I just think humans exploring potentially dangerous areas, if someone dies, that's not on nature.
Right.
That's on human hubris.
Don't be mad at nature. Nature is neutral. Mm-hmm. So what is our next movie in this, The Ecstasy of Influence?
No idea.
It's called Cría Cuervos. Cría Cuervos by
Spanish film?
Carlos Saura. Yes. Another Spanish film. And not only another Spanish film, but a Spanish film starring Ana Torrent from Spirit of the Beehive.
She's the child.
From Spirit of the Beehive, yep. She plays Ana in Spirit of the Beehive, and she plays Ana in Cría Cuervos. Not the same character.
She still couldn't remember her name.
So, yes, I have to run now because it is time to start celebrating Passover. But, yes, tonight's first night of Passover, first Seder. So I will cut it off there. But make sure you check us out next time. Thank you for listening, everybody. And until then, I am Phil.
And I'm Willow.
And we'll see you when
it's Del Toro time.